למען ציון לא אחשה ולמען ירושלים לא אשקוט.
You are listening to Hebrew Voices with Nehemiah Gordon. Thank you for supporting Nehemiah's Makor Hebrew Foundation. Learn more at nehemiahswall.com.
Shalom, this is Nehemiah Gordon with Hebrew Voices, and I am here today with Mudar Zaharan. He is the Secretary General of the Jordanian Opposition Coalition. He was born in Amman, Jordan. He's U.S. educated, and he has a PhD in Middle Eastern banking from the United Kingdom. And today he's living in exile in London as a political refugee. Shalom, Mudar.
Salam alaikum, shalom, and peace.
Amen. I love that we started this talking about peace. And what inspired me to contact you was a video that someone had sent me. You're born in Amman, but you're a Palestinian Jordanian. Would you say that's the correct description?
Well, if you want to choose the term, I understand that you are an Israeli. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get to the nitty-gritty of it, you too are Palestinian. There was a country, a piece of land that included today's Israel and today's Jordan in one single country that was under the Turkish or Ottoman occupation. Then came the British occupation, called the country Palestine. Mm-hmm. The Jews in that country were called Palestinians, and the Arabs in that country were called Palestinians. There was an oppressed Jewish minority and a strong Arab majority, and there has been, unfortunately, very sad massacres against the Jews in the 1930s. When they were trying to establish a national home or basically seeking independence. So the Britons decided to divide the country and give the Jews a homeland, which actually included all of today's Jordan and all of today's Israel. So in theory, according to international agreement, Israel should extend from the Mediterranean all the way to the Iraqi borders. That did not happen because there were a lot of Arabs there and there had to be some sort of agreement. 1919, the Arabs, including the ancestors of today's Jordan's king, met with the Jewish community and decided to agree through an internationally binding agreement to divide the country. The Arabs took 78% of the land because they were the majority, and the Jews took 22% of the land. Mm-hmm. Palestine was divided. 78% became today's Jordan, and 22% was today's Israel. Then the Arabs, basically the Hashemite rulers of Jordan, they are called the Hashemite clan, to whom today's Jordan's king belonged, refused to honor the agreement. First thing they did, the Arabs who moved during the war, which is the majority of the Arabs who moved during the war, left the West Bank of the river, which is Israel, left it into the East Bank of the river, which is Jordan. Until today, after 70 years, the Jordanian kings still recognize them as refugees who should, quote unquote, someday return home to Palestine. Everything you see in Nehemiah on television today, yeah, while you're watching Fox News or CNN, mm-hmm, is the outcome of the Jordanian king refusing to recognize or honor the agreement. If they said from day one, those are not refugees, this is their country, we wouldn't have the Israeli-Palestinian conflict today.
Mm. You mentioned in the video, and I think you just described, correct me if I'm wrong, the Faisal-Weizmann Agreement. And it's interesting. Look, I grew up in a Zionist family in Chicago. And when I was 12 years old, I knew what the Balfour Declaration was. I don't know that I could quote it, but I knew the Balfour Declaration. I knew it was from 1917. I knew it promised the Jews a homeland in Israel, issued by the British. I had never heard of the Faisal-Weizmann Agreement, even though Weizmann eventually became Israel's first president. And incidentally, he was a distant cousin of mine. So you're saying there's an internationally binding agreement, like, you know, the British issuing the Balfour Declaration, they're an imperialist power, but you're saying the Arabs actually signed an agreement giving what today is Israel, Hamas's Gaza, and the PA, Palestinian Authority's West Bank, meaning there are three political entities, and today what should be, according to the Faisal-Weizmann Agreement, Israel, or the Jewish state anyway. Is that accurate?
Actually, it's a very accurate description.
So who are these Hashemites? A lot of my listeners are thinking this has something to do with the Hebrew word Hashem, nothing to do with it.
No.
So who are Hashemites?
Okay, the Hashemite kings of Jordan came to Jordan, or actually then what's called Palestine. They came from Saudi Arabia. They are a clan of 87 individuals as they stand today. They are ruling up to 8 million people.
Wow.
Well, those 8 million people, of which 88% are of Palestinian heritage, they have no rights. They are not entitled to any of the basic things an illegal alien in Texas could have access to. No health care, no school education, not entitled for a driver's license except under certain circumstances and conditions, no government representation, not even local city hall. They're not allowed to vote in city hall elections.
Let me just be clear. So 88% of the population of the Kingdom of Jordan today don't have the basic rights that an illegal alien in New Mexico or Texas would have. And people who were born there, you're talking about, right?
Not only born there, until the Hashemites came, this was their native country.
Wow.
Imagine if, for example, someone came to Texas from Canada and takes over Texas.
Can I give an example my listeners will understand better?
Yeah.
If someone were to come from Beijing, China, and 87 people, you said, or how many are the Hashemite clan?
Today, there are 87 individuals, including the children.
So 87 individuals would come from Beijing, China, and they would extend their rule over the United States. And if you were a native-born U.S. person, you could be of Mexican heritage, you could be of Jewish heritage, you could be of any heritage. But because you weren't from Beijing, China, you would be a second-class citizen. Wow, I mean, that's mind-boggling. How is this possible that no one knows about this? I'd never heard this, I'll be honest with you. I've lived here in Israel for 23 years, and I never heard anything about this. And you describe Jordan as an apartheid state.
Jordan is absolutely the last remaining apartheid state. There are very oppressive states out there. For example, North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them does actually... I'll give you an example. Jordanians of Palestinian heritage, they have a label put on their passports that starts with the letter P.
Wow.
So this is absolute apartheid that's very similar in ways to the way the Nazis used to label Jews with the Star of David and the word Jude. It's not the same. We can never compare our suffering to that of the Jewish nation, but it's very similar in concept.
And you were telling me that if you're not part of these Bedouin Hashemites, then you can't serve in the army in any kind of high rank. You pay higher taxes in practice.
You pay full taxes, get zero representation and zero benefits from the state. We pay incredible taxes up, for example, Toyota Camry that cost $20,000 in Texas cost us up to $80,000 in a month.
And that's because of taxes, a lot of that.
Yeah, taxes to cover the expenses and the lavish lifestyle of the royal family.
And do the Hashemites pay those taxes?
Absolutely not.
What?
The 12% non-Palestinians pay less taxes.
Oh, so it's the Hashemites and other local people who are allies of them.
Yeah, and they used to be. Now the situation has changed a lot. Mm. But basically, bottom line is, we are talking about a crude apartheid that's not present in any country I know of. I mean, except maybe for ISIS, where ISIS labels non-Muslims as dhimmis and mm-hmm. other names. But why is this not in the media?
Yeah.
Why do we see people protesting Israeli prime minister and elected official, democratically elected official? They protest his presence in the Congress. They protest his presence in European capitals. While on the other hand, nobody says a word about Jordan's king, who is an oppressor, who is a king, non-democratic. They welcome him and welcome his wife all over the media, Oprah Winfrey. You name it, any of those media celebrities are good friends with Jordan's king. This, to me, is evidence of how, unfortunately, anti-Semitic and unfair and biased the media in the U.S. is. I'm not claiming that it's generally anti-Semitic, but there are seriously anti-Semitic elements. I'll give you just a very quick example. My wife's cousin was a 15-year-old, was shot 5 times and made to bleed to death by the Jordanian police because he failed to show an ID a year ago. He failed to show an ID in front of the courthouse.
Wow.
And he was shot 5 times and made to bleed to death. And nothing happened. The police officer, nothing happened to him. And this was never news. If this was in Israel, we see some of my people stabbing police officers and get shot after that, which is very heartbreaking for me. But on the other hand, they were stabbing people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's news. And you would see it on Fox News, CNN, CBS News. Oh, a 15-year-old Palestinian shot. This is not good. This is not fair. This is not good for the interest of the United States. Because as much as I disagree with Israel, the only stable and reliable ally the United States has in our region now is Israel. So there must be a change of heart. There must be a change and more education in the process to bring about some change that's good for all of us, the American interest, the Israelis, and the Palestinians and Jordanians.
Am I correct in understanding that you say Jordan should be a Palestinian state? Maybe not the only one, but a Palestinian state?
Jordan should be ruled by the majority's vote.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the Jordanian people are Palestinians.
So why does the U.S. and Western countries, Oprah Winfrey, well, why do they support this apartheid regime of the Hashemites and keeping 88% of the population? And you know what struck me? My grandmother came as an immigrant to the United States, and she settled in Chicago. And I was struck by the thought, so if I went to get a driver's license in Illinois, and they said to me, oh no, your grandmother was from Eastern Europe, and it's hard to say which country, Lithuania, at one time it was Russia. Your grandmother's from Lithuania, you can't have a driver's license here. And I thought, how is that a way to live? And you're telling me 88% of the Jordanian population, that's how they're living. And let me share another story. I was driving a few years back through the Arava Valley, and I stopped at this kind of like a gas station where they have a restaurant. It's a famous one called 101. And they had a picture there of the king of Jordan, of King Hussein, the previous king. This was, you know, while he was still king. It was a while back. And I asked them, why do you have a picture of the king of Jordan? And look, they're on the border with Jordan. And they say, this has been a peaceful border for our entire lives. And we look to the king of Jordan as our king, even though he's a foreign king. We don't have a king in Israel. So we kind of look to him as our king. And then we have his picture in our restaurant. And you're telling me the king of Jordan, or at least the current one, is anti-Semitic. So what are we missing? In America and in Israel, we're missing part of the story. So help us understand this.
Okay. Reason you're missing part of the story is the way the king handles the media.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just mentioning facts.
Mm-hmm.
Every single celebrity on U.S. television, except for a few decent ones, every single one of them has actually dined and wined with Jordan's king. You can see it on their Facebook sites, be it Jennifer Lopez, Oprah Winfrey, the list goes on and on and on. So they literally kill those media people with kindness, and I'm afraid to say, shower them with the good time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Israel cannot afford to do, because Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, has people to account for the money he's going to spend.
Mm.
That's why he doesn't travel first class.
Mm-hmm.
Like the king owns 6 private jets with his small family of 5 people. So that said, the main concept here is the fact that who is this current king of Jordan? The average American, the average Israeli, it lives on the legacy of King Hussein. King Hussein was not a peaceful man. King Hussein knew his limits. He knew he could not defeat Israel. He tried twice. So he came back to his senses and he decided to make peace, which is not a voluntary peace. We need to be honest. He could not defeat Israel. The only reason he did not fight Israel is because he no longer was able to fight Israel. He tried twice. He occupied Jerusalem and the West Bank when he should have not done so for 19 years. He fought even 1973. There was a big war for the listeners who are probably not aware about it. And he joined when he thought the Israelis were losing. But he knew his limits. He was logical. This young man, let's start where he is today.
And this is King Abdullah.
This is King Abdullah of Jordan, who is married to the beautiful Queen Rania, who is also Palestinian, by the way.
Okay.
So lately, we have seen the stabbing things, terrorist crimes in Israel. This is what Israel said, quote unquote, Jordan is a major contributor to the unrest in Jerusalem
mm-hmm.
through exaggeration of events in both action and propaganda, end quote. The Israeli embassy in Amman protested twice that Jordan's state media, I'm not talking about state-controlled media, I'm talking official state media, is calling for the stabbing of the Jews, quote-unquote, the expansion of stabbing operations, which is a model that should be expanded and tolerated. Imagine.
Let me just repeat that. So the state media in Jordan is calling for stabbing of Jews and terrorist attacks.
Not even indicating, calling literally for stabbing Jews.
And I want to bring something controversial up. So there was a 13-year-old Palestinian boy who stabbed another 13-year-old Jewish boy who was riding a bicycle. And then the Palestinian president said that he was shot dead. It wasn't true. He actually survived and is being prosecuted. You're saying that the Kingdom of Jordan bears some responsibility for inciting that little 13-year-old boy who probably doesn't know any better, but he's hearing this from his own people. He's hearing this from the King of Jordan that they should go out and stab Jews. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I'm absolutely that. And the evidence is there. And the king is obviously anti-Israel. He has worked openly against Israel's interest. His statements were clear that the last statement was, we would fight to prevent Israel from provoking people in Jerusalem in through both Christian and Muslim sites, which is not true. Israel has never attacked Christian or Muslim sites. And on top, there was never an Israeli soldier inside the church. They go through the mosque through some unfortunate events for certain reasons. But these statements are uncalled for. The king obviously has an anti-Israeli agenda. This might not be state manly to say, but I know someone who is now a very successful businessman in the United States, very respected in New York, who went to school with Jordan's king when he was a teenager in Massachusetts. And he told me, and that person knows the king, and I'm still in touch with him today, he told me how anti-Semitic the king was as a teenager. He told me he used the word terrorist to describe Israel.
So he's not just anti-Israel. You're saying King Abdullah is anti-Semitic, like a Jew hater.
I have no doubt about that. Okay. Because one of his family, his sister-in-law, during the last Gaza war, posted a video on Twitter. And this is a public person. This is, imagine if President Obama's sister or sister-in-law posted something on Twitter. Mm-hmm. She posted a video for a crazy man called Brother Nathaniel.
I've heard of him. He's a vicious anti-Semite.
Yeah, he's an openly anti-Semitic person.
Yeah. And by the way, if President Obama's sister did it, it would be different because America really is a democracy and he has no control over his sister. But things aren't really like that in Jordan, are they? Meaning if the king's sister did something that he didn't like, she might find herself in all kinds of trouble.
In jail, literally in jail, okay. If not killed, if necessary.
Right. So there's at least a tacit approval of the kingdom of
Jordan. Oh, no, open approval.
Open approval, okay.
Listen to what the king says and does, not only what he does. Mm-hmm. The king is openly anti-Semitic, always calling for trouble against Israel, always bashing Israel in the United Nations, even bashing Israel inside the U.S. Congress. And this needs possibly another 2 episodes of your show to explain what's really happening in the Congress.
So the King of Jordan is an anti-Semite and he's anti-Israel. And look, he's looking out for the interest of his country. I guess you could say his apartheid country. What's your solution? You're the head of the Jordanian opposition coalition. What is your solution? What do you want to see happen?
Okay, listen, we need to be realistic. Jordan is a strategic partner to the U.S. Very few of you realize there's thousands, and again, I say thousands, of U.S. soldiers stationed in Jordan's. And
wait a second, there are thousands of U.S. combat troops in the Kingdom of Jordan?
Combat troops in the Kingdom of Jordan.
I don't think anybody, well, I'm sure obviously some people know about that, but I'm pretty sure most people in my audience have never heard about that.
12,500.
12,000 U.S. soldiers. And so look, the average person maybe who's listening to this, who knows a little bit about it, is thinking, well, okay, so he's an anti-Semite. This is what the Israelis are for sure thinking. He's an anti-Semite, but what do you want, to bring in the Muslim Brotherhood or ISIS? Isn't that our alternative?
No, absolutely not. Let's be clear here. It's better to keep Jordan safe and stable.
Right.
But we need to know that there are intelligence reports that the king may not hold on to power for too long.
Oh.
First of all, many of your audience may like or not like Hillary Clinton. But Hillary Clinton, she said something we know is true. She said it, quote unquote, we should not be pushing the peace process on the Israelis and the Palestinians because Jordan's future is not clear and we don't know if Jordan will remain stable. Mm. She was, according to the Washington Post, the first American former U.S. official who would openly reckon that Jordan's king may not actually last. The Mossad, the Israeli intelligence, is one of the most effective intelligence institutions in the galaxy. And there was a leak a year ago that they thought that Jordan's king will be Jordan's last king. So the question is, what will happen once this king leaves? It's not about he's a bad guy, we should get rid of him. It's about this guy may not make it. What are our other options?
And let me read a quote from one of your articles. You wrote, the king's minister of political reform said on Al Jazeera, and now this is a quote from King Abdullah's minister of political reform, the Muslim Brotherhood is a part of the Hashemite regime, end quote. What?
Yes. And the king himself said that in another interview.
Oh, okay.
An interview with the Atlantic magazine, and you can look that up. It's called The Modern King in the Arab Spring.
We'll post a link to that.
Okay, he said that the margin of distrust between him and the Muslim Brotherhood is only 10%. So he trusts the Muslim Brotherhood by 90%.
While he, at the same time, persecutes, like, you're an Orthodox Muslim who wants a secular government.
I am a secularist leader who wants separation of church and state, or okay, mosque and state in Jordan.
Even though you are an Orthodox Muslim, right?
Yeah. Okay. I keep my religion at home.
Okay.
And I want a secular state that's not an Islamist state.
So the Islamists, the Muslim Brotherhood, they're encouraged by the King Abdullah of Jordan. At the same time, he persecutes people who want a secular government. Is that right?
I was sentenced to life in prison for, quote unquote, trying to change the political system of the country and having a foul mouth against the king.
I love that. They said in the thing I read that you had a long tongue. That must be some Arab expression.
Yes.
Because that's not an expression in Hebrew or English that I'm familiar with, but it means a foul mouth, I guess. Basically, you insulted the king of Jordan the way they see it. And more importantly, you said he shouldn't be ruling, there should be democracy. And for that, you were sentenced to life in prison and while you're living in exile in London.
Yeah, while on the other hand, the Muslim Brotherhood, they march against America and against Israel all day in Jordan under the supervision and guidance of the police. This is not a theory. This is not just something I'm saying. I've documented this. There are enough documentation of the connection between the king and the Muslim Brotherhood. They are a part of the regime. I'll give you just one quick example. In 2012, I single-handedly launched a million-man revolution in Jordan, population of barely 8 million. That revolution was countered and attacked by the Muslim Brotherhood figures. So we have basically an anti-Semitic king who's not even shy about that, and a king who is openly pro-Muslim Brotherhood. He was asked by TV interviewer Charlie Rose. He was asked, I think a few months ago, about the Muslim Brotherhood, and his answer was, well, they are a legitimate entity. So the only country in the world now that allows the Muslim Brotherhood, the only country in this planet that allows them, is Jordan and Sudan, which is an Islamic state.
Wow. So in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood is illegal. Am I right?
In Saudi, they put them in jail.
In Saudi Arabia, they put them in jail. And
so imagine, Saudi puts them in jail and the king allows them to have...
The king of Jordan.
TVs, radios, the king of Jordan. He allows them to have their own TV, their own radio, and their own trust fund, which is worth $3 billion.
Wow. So they're actually a registered charity in Jordan, and they're amassing this war chest that, you know, they're not going to use it for hospitals, probably most of it.
Yeah.
And because this is the way I think a lot of the people in the world see it, certainly in Israel, it's, well, we could have the King Abdullah, who maybe hates us, but he really, you know, he's probably like his father, or we could have the Muslim Brotherhood or ISIS. And you're saying that's a false dilemma, that really, if you have the King of Jordan, you really do have the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, you already have the Muslim Brotherhood. Also, there are things that, first of all, there was a claim that he was launching a war against ISIS. Just check the facts. You didn't have to believe me. Only 6 Jordanian jets were involved against ISIS. And after that, the 6 Jordanian jets stopped flying against ISIS. They operated for only 60 days, and he stopped flying against ISIS after that.
And one of them was shot down, right? That was the guy who was burned in the
cage. One was, poor kid. I mean,
yeah, that's horrible.
I know his cousin, and I know the details, and that's a different story. Anyways, and on top of that, there was a claim that the king himself was flying jets. The king doesn't fly jets.
His father did.
His father did, but he doesn't. There was also the claim that the king is protecting the borders. How could the king explain that 3,500, 10% of ISIS fighters came from Jordan?
Whoa.
And so it's basically an average of 4 ISIS fighters cross the border from Jordan into ISIS land every day under the king's nose. So this is, even if he has good intentions, this is doing a very bad job. Now, what are the other options? I need to warn people. We believe the king is going to fall. The Mossad, the Israeli intelligence, believes the king is going to fall. Hillary Clinton, who obviously has advisors and she has heard it somewhere where she can trust it to bring it in television, that he also is going to fall. So it's either that you support us, the seculars, the Jordanian opposition coalition, either you support us and help us come to power, or that the Muslim Brotherhood are going to fill the gap and we're going to end up with another Islamist state, which is a disaster for everyone, including Israel. What's the problem? So we are powerful. We are influential. We have documented our influence, that the Jordanian streets listen to us and they like us. and that most of them are not pro-Muslim Brotherhood. Unlike the situation, for example, inside Israel, the Palestinians inside Israel, they are very Islamized, very pro-Hamas, very pro-ISIS in most cases. Mm-hmm. Now, how can you support us? Some might ask, like, if you are so popular, so why are you worried? You're going to win the elections. It's not as simple as that. The CIA and the U.S. Department of State are not talking to us at all. The U.S. Department of State in Jordan, the embassy in Amman, is talking only to the Muslim Brotherhood. And this is documented. Again, everything I say today is documented. Your audience could come back to you and say, we need evidence for X, Y, Z, whatever he said. And I'm willing to provide it. The U.S. Department of State is not talking to us. They don't recognize we exist. The CIA doesn't talk to us at all. We need you to write to your Congress if you want to bring peace, if you want Jordan to remain stable.
So guys, pay attention. This is the call to action. This is something that you can actually do. You've now been educated on some of the issues. And look, when King Abdullah goes, if he goes, which is a strong possibility, you could end up with ISIS. You could end up with the Muslim Brotherhood. And here's the third option. So, all right, now, Mudar, tell them what they can do.
The third option is us, the Jordanian Opposition Coalition. We want you to contact your Congress member. We want you to tell him and her, these people, Mudar Zahran, and you can Google my name, why is the U.S. government refusing to talk to him? Why are they ignoring him? Why are they not even giving him a hearing? Why are they tolerating and talking only to the Muslim Brotherhood? Do they want Jordan to become another ISIS? Please write to your congressman to save the day. And you're not asking for too much. You're telling him the guy says that he and his groups are seculars. Why are you refusing to even listen to them? Mm-hmm. So this is what we need from you. And this is what you can do for us and for peace and for Israel and the United States. Now, Nehemia, let me be clear.
Please.
When we come to power, what we want to do two things. First, we want to honor the peace agreement with Israel and expand it and stop the terrorist incitement, which is ongoing for years now under this king. Second, we want to expand our cooperation with the United States, especially in the war on terror, which the king is not doing. And third, we want to ban all Islamist groups in Jordan. We want to shut down Hamas offices. We want to shut down the Muslim Brotherhood. And by the way, for those who didn't know, the central command of the Muslim Brotherhood for the world, at least the Middle East, is in Jordan.
Really?
So we want to get rid of all of those together. That's our promise, and that's what we're seeking to do.
Wow. And it's located in Amman, a few blocks away from the palace of King Abdullah.
It's 4 miles away. 4 miles away from the king's palace, the Muslim Brotherhood.
And this isn't a secret. Like, everybody knows where this is. It's an officially recognized institution that's apparently part of the Hashemite regime, the Hashemite government.
Yep, exactly. How could the king be fighting ISIS when the headquarters of the Universal Muslim Brotherhood is 4 miles away from his bedroom?
Now, you wrote something in your articles. I want to get back to a little bit of detail here. And this was really a surprise to me because I think some who do know more about the situation will say, well, wait a minute. Al-Zarqawi, who is one of the top people in Al-Qaeda, he was from Jordan. And all these other figures, the guy who killed all those CIA people in Afghanistan, he was from Jordan. And one of the things you mentioned in the article is that those terrorists actually came from the 12% of the population that's Bedouin. Is that right?
That's true. Absolutely true. I represent my people. Mm-hmm. I don't make a difference between them based on their heritage at all. I see them all as Jordanians.
Okay.
But on the other hand, the terrorists you mentioned, to be honest, all of them came from Bedouin backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Mr. Al-Blui, who killed 7 CIA officers, including one whom I've worked with in Jordan, he was a Bedouin and he was hired by the king's intelligence.
Really?
The other guy, Mr. Zarqawi, was also released by a royal pardon by the king. So we're looking at recklessness here from the king's government. Now, where do most of my people stand?
Yeah.
Most of my people do not like Israel, but most of my people do not want an Islamist state. Why am I saying that with confidence? Mm-hmm. You walk down Amman or go to the beach in Jordan, and you will see the way people dress, the way women dress, the way people act, the way people celebrate and behave. is very secular. Mm-hmm. In many places, my American friends in Amman, they've told me, many of them, that they don't actually feel the difference as if it's a Western country. So you're talking about the population that hates Israel, but is not willing to go to war with Israel. And trust me, I know a lot of countries that do not necessarily like Jews, but they're not willing to accept an Islamist rule. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference.
And here's a quote from one of your articles. You wrote, "We would never agree to our Palestinian brothers being deported from Ramallah to Amman. Nonetheless, they should become Jordanian citizens residing in Israel, not citizens of a Jewish Israel." In other words, you see Jordan as representing the Palestinian people. Is that right? Because it's 88% Palestinian already.
It's not only that. I mean,
yeah.
Okay, what most of you do not realize, every single Palestinian on the planet holds a Jordanian passport.
Really?
Including the Palestinians in Jerusalem, including the Palestinians in the West Bank, including the Palestinians in Gaza. So in other words, I've never heard of people who have a country holding its passport who are still being called refugees and still being discussed as a bargaining chip by the king and Abbas. And allow me to mention the Palestinian president, Mr. Mahmoud Abbas, holds a Jordanian passport.
Really? Can we talk for a minute about the refugees? So the whole world right now is hearing about how hundreds of thousands of Syrians and Afghanis are walking to Germany. And I was listening to some of these testimonies about how they were in these camps for a few weeks and sometimes months. And then within a relatively short period of time, these refugees, who are legitimately refugees fleeing horrible war conditions, they will then get a German citizenship. And what you're telling me is you had all these Palestinians who left Palestine during Israel's, what we call the War of Independence. I guess Palestinians would call it the Nakba, during that event. And they're now third, maybe fourth generation in Jordan being treated as second-class citizens. I mean, why is it that they can walk out of Syria and get citizenship within a year or something like that? And now you're third or fourth generation.
Well, you're making it a little complicated. Yeah. Let's make it more simple. An illegal alien crossing the borders to El Paso, Texas, she could deliver a baby half an hour after she crossed the borders, right, and that baby is an American.
Right.
In our case, we've spent 70 years holding Jordanian passports. That's seven generations. That's my great-grandfather holding a Jordanian passport. And Jordan's king is still, according to latest WikiLeaks cables, negotiating with the Americans that he should be getting, quote-unquote, $55 billion for, quote-unquote, hosting the Palestinian refugees. This is ridiculous.
The ones born in this country. And
yes.
Wait, so does that include his wife?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. You know, that's an excellent question.
Like, that's ridiculous.
This is all ridiculous. People are not educated about the issue. Mm-hmm. But to make a long story short, he's always selling the propaganda. That's not true. This is my very simple message. You will wake up tomorrow watching TV, listening to the king declaring that he's stepping down, and Jordan's going to fill into a vacuum, and then there's going to be the Muslim Brotherhood jumping in because your government is not talking to Jordan secular. It does not even recognize they exist. Whoa. Unless you act today, unless you help us.
Okay, so how can they act? What can they do? And it's got to be simple. You know, I've got people right now who are listening to this on the treadmill at the gym. They're not going to go write, you know, a long letter. What can they do that's real simple?
It's simple. Write to your congressman, just mm-hmm. three lines. Mm-hmm. Mr. or Mrs. Congressman, Congresswoman, I've heard about this guy called Mudar Zahran. He is the leader of seculars in Jordan. Our government is not talking to him and ignoring him. We understand that Jordan could be subject to change like other Arab countries. Why are you not talking to him? Could you please, Mr. or Mrs. Congressman, woman, could you please write to the CIA or the Department of State telling them you have to talk to this guy?
Okay, and I'm going to post this on my website with a link where as soon as you get off the treadmill, as soon as you finish with your walk in the park, go to NehemiahsWall.com and there'll be a link on the webpage for this interview and you can take action. You can do something. And if you don't, we might end up with the Muslim Brotherhood over here across the river in Jordan. We might end up with ISIS or al-Nusra. We might end up with all three of them fighting. That's probably what will happen. We'll end up with all three of them fighting each other, along with maybe some Hezbollah people and who knows what else is going on. Can you just say, like, really briefly, really quickly, a couple of words about what's going on in Syria? Because, I mean, is this a struggle between the Iranians and the Sunnis? And do you have any thoughts on that, what's going on in Syria?
Well, it's basically a struggle between Iran and versus the Sunni powers inside Syria, mm-hmm. Assad, Hezbollah. And believe it or not, and this is documented, for the last 2 years, Jordan's king has been in line with Assad, really? Helping him. Yeah, yeah, this is documented. This is not a theory.
Wow.
But he's helping him because he's afraid if Assad falls, he's going to be next.
Mm.
So this is documented that intelligence-wise, he's been cooperating with Assad. Now, on the other hand, there is Saudi Arabia spearheading the fight, and there's also the radical groups in the middle. What's the outcome? The outcome is the war is going to remain consistent, in my opinion, for another 5 to 10 years. But now we have Syria as the Ivy League of terrorist education. Most of those, there's up to 20,000 Western passports holders, including Americans, fighting in Syria. And those are going to return home eventually. And you're going to hear about their operations in Texas and elsewhere.
Wow.
So in my opinion, there should be a clear ban on all Western citizens from even visiting Syria.
Wow.
If you could make a ban on visiting Cuba, you should make it clear that any American, even Muslim or non, visiting Syria is actually going to face prosecution. To conclude, I can imagine major terrorist operations carried out by American and European citizens, actually Muslims, who are returning from Syria.
Wow.
I can see that happening in the very foreseen future. Also, let's just remember, this is the first civil war and like militia war in history in which the militias operate jets, fighter jets.
Wow.
You know?
Welcome to the 21st century. This is scary. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. And I hope my listeners will hear about this. And look, why is this important for me? Because I live in Israel, and I've been duped to think that the Kingdom of Jordan is our friend, and what you're telling me is they're in league with the Muslim Brotherhood inciting people against Israel to keep themselves in power and at the head of this apartheid regime where they keep 88% of their population as second-class citizens. And all you're saying is, look, let's at least explore the option of a secular government. And so this is important for me over here. We don't want war. We want peace, ultimately. And it's really refreshing to hear somebody from the Arab, Palestinian, Jordanian side who is talking about peace in some kind of realistic way instead of maintaining a perpetual state of war. And one last quote from you is a really powerful quote. You said, "We Arabs have given our dictators carte blanche to impoverish, terrorize, oppress, and destroy us all in the name of the great Arab struggle to end the Zionist entity." In other words, what these dictators in Arab countries have done, if I'm understanding correctly, is they've used the great Zionist, meaning Israeli, a boogeyman to keep their people in this. It's almost like Orwellian, like in 1984, where we've got this external enemy. So even though we're persecuting our people and we're keeping them in this state of oppression, well, you need us because we're defending you against the external enemy. Wow. I mean, this is a very different way of looking at the situation that it's not even presented this way in the Israeli left-wing media. And so I think this is an important perspective to be aware of.
Nehemiah, as we speak, just 2 minutes ago, breaking news from Jordan, shooting in downtown Amman, which is allegedly a very safe city, and two American citizens killed. Also, yes, the other day, two American women were thrown off a building in Amman.
Were thrown off a building?
Yes, and very horrifying death. So four Americans killed in Jordan in less than 72 hours.
And who's doing this? Who's doing, or who do you think is doing the killing?
It's not clear, but basically the country is no longer safe. Basically the country is now in turmoil, and the worst is to come. Allow me just to mention to your audience that a year ago when I was saying Jordan is not safe and not stable, I was ridiculed by everyone who actually has a connection to Jordan. And now, two Americans shot point blank in Amman less than half an hour ago.
Wow. Well, again, I'm going to end this program with thanking you for taking the time. I mean, I'm really honored that I got to speak to the head of the Jordanian opposition coalition. It's really an honor. And I really want to end with a prayer for peace. I think the Palestinian people, they deserve to be treated as human beings and not live in third generation, fourth generation for 70 years in Jordan as second-class citizens. And look, we've got issues on this side of the river. I'm not going to pretend we don't. But to find out that's going on over there and the Palestinians are suffering, that breaks my heart. They should be treated like human beings.
In my opinion, 90% of what you see in television regarding the Palestinian and Israeli conflict is exaggerated, unfair, biased, and to a great extent, anti-Semitic. Thank you very much for having me today. Peace, shalom, salam alaikum, and God bless your listeners.
Okay, thank you, Mudar. Shalom and salam.
Salam alaikum.
This episode of Hebrew Voices was sponsored by listeners in Alberta, Canada. Thank you. Toda.
You have been listening to Hebrew Voices with Nehemiah Gordon. Thank you for supporting Nehemiah's Makor Hebrew Foundation. Learn more at nehemiahswall.com.